and welcome back to Curious Medicine. I'm Christy.
I'm Brian.
And today we're talking about hemorrhoids. We'd like to preface this episode today by saying that due to the nature of the topic, this particular episode may not be suitable for children. So Brian, have you ever had a hemorrhoid?
No, I have not. Have you?
No. Well, that's kind of personal. You shouldn't ask a lady if she has hemorrhoids or not.
But people need to talk about this kind of stuff because, as we discover, this goes undiagnosed because people are embarrassed to talk about their buttocks issues.
Why would people be embarrassed to talk about hemorrhoids?
Well, because we're dealing with the anus. Did you ever see Borat?
No, but we've talked about this before, your peculiar way of pronouncing
anus. Well, it's
anus.
Him, because he says it at the end of the movie. He says, my anus. So I may say that from time to time.
Okay, what's your story about? What's your story to get us warmed up, get the crowd warmed up for this episode?
Yes. So we're talking about hemorrhoids. So I'm sure when people think of hemorrhoids, they immediately think of the anus, which, if you're not familiar with what the anus is, I will use the more common term, your butthole. So that's not a clinical term, but for anyone who's confused, right. We're talking about buttholes.
Right.
So back in the day when I was a lowly medical assistant, I was working in an urgent care. And I don't know people who know this, but when you're working as a medical assistant, then you have a lot of hats that you wear in an urgent care setting. So you might work what they call the front office, where you intake patients, you do insurance, you know, all the stuff, you greet the patient, all that stuff, and back office. And so where you actually do the medical part, where you, you know, take vitals and do all the other things, you're helping getting medications ready, all that. And so I was wearing both of those hats at the time. And so because they didn't want to pay for anybody else.
Right.
So this lady comes in. And she was in excruciating pain. Like, I could tell it was not a good day. And before I could even say, hi.
Yeah.
And I won't say the name of the business, but I could say, hi, welcome to our business. Yeah. You know, how can it? She's like, she's waved her hand. She's like, I have hemorrhoids and I need help now. And I mean, she looked like she was shot. Like, I was like, well,
and I don't have time for your salutations.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't have time for this, you know. And so I was thinking, like, okay, well, she looked like she needed to go to an emergency room.
Right.
And so I told the doctor, I'm like, well, I took her to her patient room, got her checked in, and I went straight to the doc. I'm like, she's in a lot of pain. He's like, okay, well, let me see what's going on. And when you work with doctors, they're, you know, they've achieved the highest level of education. They're, you know, especially when you're in that setting, they're the people that you're looking to keep calm and keep things, you know.
But sometimes it is nice to transfer a little bit of your excitedness over to them. Like, you want to see them maybe walk a little faster to the exam room.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And when they don't, you're kind of like, oh.
But
okay.
Not just walk a little faster, but they're the ones that set the tone. I guess that's the best way to put it. So he goes in, and at this time, I had to leave the room when he went to do the actual examination.
Right.
And so he closed the door. And in about 5 minutes, the door flings open, and he had a mask on. And in his eyes were, we both grew up in the South, but his eyes were big as quarters. And he looked at me. He goes, I've never seen anything like that before. He goes, I'm calling to have her, you know, transferred over to the emergency. And he did not keep it together. And then in my mind, I'm like, well, let me see. But, of course, you know.
Well, and also you're like, oh, I thought I knew what a hemorrhoid was.
Yeah, maybe, I was shocked. He said
I'm mistaken.
He tried to describe it to me. He said it was about the size of a very large, I mean, golf balls are only one size. I don't think he played golf, but he said a very large golf ball. But he's like, it was, he said that he'd never seen anything. This man had been a doctor for years. And so, urgent care. Yeah, he's surgery, all of it.
Right.
And he had to sit down. Like, it was, it was something else. But when she came in, I was like,
I feel like I haven't lived then.
Oh, yeah, no. And I'm still, to this day, I'm like, God, I wish I could have seen it, you know.
Right.
But he made arrangements for her. He didn't have to call an ambulance or anything. He just made arrangements for her. But he was like, do you have anyone that can help? They had to call someone, one of her friends, to come get her because she drove herself over there. But when she came in the room, I'm like, well, just have a seat.
Right. Yeah, why don't I have a seat?
So she's like, that's not going to happen. And so somebody had to come, and she laid down. He's like, you need to lay down in the back seat, and then they'll take care of you. When you get there, they got a gurney for her and then took care of business. But she had to have emergency. No, I don't think it was emergent, but it can be an emergency. But she had to have surgery to have it removed. So crazy.
Yeah, I feel a little uninformed.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness in all of my medical trials and tribulations, I have been... you know, blessed not to have hemorrhoids yet. So, well, Brian, tell us exactly what is a hemorrhoid.
Good question. I think it's important, actually. Now, I want to preface this by saying I'm going to give a very basic overview because this gets into the weeds and we're not here to give like a lecture about specific medical conditions or anything like that.
Right.
We're going to go with a WebMD kind of
General. Explanation. Very general, yeah, because this episode, after all, is about treatment, not
current science and symptoms.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Like I'm writing a paper.
This is not medical school.
Et al.
This is not a medical school
yes.
podcast.
Exactly. So, but it is important to distinguish what they are, because I think a lot of people, myself included, until I got into medicine and started actually learning about everything, I think people just think that there's some sort of growth and they don't really understand what they really are. And I'm sure maybe some people listening will find this information kind of fascinating, because I think the misconception is that it's some sort of like cystic formation or some sort of pimple or something like that that gets out of control.
Yeah, I had a whole lot of false notions about hemorrhoids until this week.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I learned a lot too. So basically, what hemorrhoids are, and they're also known in historical literature, and I don't know if they're still referred to this, but as piles. Mm-hmm. The actual word hemorrhoid comes from the Greek, haemorrhosis, which is a contraction of the words haema and rhoia, which haema means blood and rhoia means flux. And so, of course, we get a lot of medical information from the Greeks because they started to kind of formulate the literature and at that time, you know. But basically what they are swollen veins in the anus and rectum, and they're similar to varicose veins, which are just very swollen veins that you would get. Most people will get those in their legs, and so they're familiar with something like that. So if you can imagine something like that with the veins, and yes, your anus has veins around it,
right.
They become extremely swollen. They can develop inside the rectum, which we'll go over, which are considered to be internal hemorrhoids, or under the skin around the anus, which is external hemorrhoids, which are what most people probably would assume that when they think of external hemorrhoids, like the lady I told in the story, she would have had an external, which I still didn't get to see, but she would have had a very large external hemorrhoid. And when I was doing the research here, you look at some of the diagrams in the books of really extreme cases.
Yeah.
This one very famous example from I believe it was a French medical textbook. Mm-hmm. It looked like there was a starfish like attached to this guy's anus. I mean, that thing was huge. And so you can imagine, you know, it's probably extremely, extremely painful.
How do you sit down with something like that?
I think nowadays they have things that they would give you to help you go to the bathroom and sit down and do the things that you need to do. But back then, we'll get into some of the historical significance of hemorrhoids. But I don't know. I guess people would just dealt with it. It is said in my research, it is one of the most described medical conditions and written about medical conditions in history, which was kind of funny because it was actually hard to do research for this.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, well, that's ironic.
Yeah.
Because it was hard to find information about
because people didn't want to talk about it.
You can find a lot of current information though.
Yeah. But it's estimated that about 3 out of 4 adults will have hemorrhoids at some point in their lifetime. And a lot of times pregnant women get these a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that's common. And another funny story real quick that I just kind of thought of, my cousin, when she was pregnant with my little cousin, our grandmother at the time was about 92 years old. And so she was living in a nursing home. And so my cousin went to get her medications. And so it was all this like old lady stuff. And so she goes to the store to get suppositories, some laxatives, some preparation H, like all this stuff. And so she puts it on the conveyor thing. And the girl checking her out is like, derp, derp, derp. And at this time, my cousin's like 9
months.
Yeah. And so she looks at her. She goes, girl, that baby must be tearing you up. And so my cousin goes, no, it's for my grandmother.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So, yeah, but tell us that you know a little bit more about the different kinds of hemorrhoids.
Well, yeah. So, first of all, hemorrhoids occur in and around the anus. The anal canal itself is described or defined as the last 4 centimeters of your digestive tract. So, if you're going from the anal sphincter, the outer external anal sphincter, that's the part that you could palpate on yourself if you
pucker up
wanted to, right? You would just go up about 2 inches deep into your rectum, and that last 4 centimeters, that is about 2 inches, is considered your anal canal. There's sort of a a line that divides that 4 centimeter length section. It's called the dentate line.
Oh.
And I believe it's an imaginary line. I don't think it's an actual, it's not an actual line, but it's a separation maybe where the tissues are different above that line versus below that line. So if you have hemorrhoids that occur above that line, those are considered internal hemorrhoids. And if you have hemorrhoids that occur below that line, then that's considered an external hemorrhoid. And external hemorrhoids are usually visible, they're palpable. Those are usually the kind that are painful. And internal hemorrhoids, you might not even know that you have them. And they're not usually painful. The reason that internal hemorrhoids are not really associated with pain is because there's a different type of tissue layer covering them. So if you have internal hemorrhoids, there's a grading scale. The internal hemorrhoids are graded 1 through 4. Grade 1 would be like the least extreme, okay? So grade 1 does not prolapse outside of the anal canal. And prolapse just means like to fall down. Grade 2, it prolapses outside the anal canal when you bear down or strain during defecation. But when you stop straining, it spontaneously retracts.
So it's peeking.
It's like a turtle. That's what we call a turtle. Grade 3 prolapses outside the anal canal when you bear down or strain during defecation. But in order to reduce it or to send it back up where it belongs, you have to manually push it back up. But it will go back up if you give it a little bit of help. Grade 4 is a non-reducible, persistently prolapsed outside the anal canal. So those are the problematic ones, besides the external ones, which can get really large, as you described. I wonder if hers was an internal one that had prolapsed and was hanging out, or if it was an external.
That's a good question, because he described it as being so big. I would assume it would have been external.
Yeah, I mean, because he didn't let you see.
I think he was such a
shock. Hard to say.
What about the thrombosed hemorrhoids?
Well, hold on. So, so one more thing about the types of hemorrhoids and where they occur. So there's also a mixed type. So meaning that the hemorrhoid sort of crosses that dentate line. It goes across. So it's like got 1 foot on both sides of the border.
Mason-Dixon line, right?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Right. Got it.
It's got a foot in both worlds. So talk to us about thrombosed hemorrhoids. By the way, we're not laughing because it's funny that people have hemorrhoids that are really painful. It's just we feel a little bit like 12-year-olds today talking about hemorrhoids. So,
and this is why people don't talk about this, because right. It's
because then
it's poopy talk.
Because then mature adults start giggling like little 12-year-old boys. Okay, go ahead.
So thrombosed hemorrhoids, which from what I understand, are extremely painful. And a thrombose just means a blood clot has formed. And those are, like I said, severely painful, really severe swelling, inflammation, and hard lumps near and around the anal canal.
Yeah, anytime you cut off the blood supply to some tissue, it becomes very, very red and hot and angry and swollen and very painful.
Yes. Yeah. So what causes this condition? Hemorrhoids can develop from increased pressure in the lower rectum. Okay, now what does that mean? So, straining during bowel movements, and so some way, I've actually remember watching Dr. Oz once, where he had a life-size anus, and he had people in the audience.
Wait, a life-size anus would be like this, you know,
small,
like,
yeah, you're right,
little.
You're right. It was a scaled-up anus.
Oh, okay.
And he had, like,
a larger-than-life-size
He had
anus.
People in the audience go through this.
Walk through it?
Yeah, it was okay. Hilarious. And he's okay. Like, but he made it, like, really tight, and he's like, see how hard it is to get out of there? So you can Google that. It was hilarious. But it's true.
It sounds like something they should do on SNL.
It's true. If you're straining repeatedly and every time you go to the bathroom, you're just putting more and more pressure in that region and on those structures in your anus, and it's more likely to cause hemorrhoids later down the road. Sitting for long periods of time on the commode. We're both from the South. You ever heard the word commode?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't say that in yeah, California. Yeah. But the toilet is what we're saying.
Yeah.
And this just reminds me that if you were to look at my Angry Birds time, you would probably be able to track my bathroom habits. because I am an expert Angry Birds player, but I do my best work in the bathroom, and mm-hmm. I'm proud to say that. So I'm sure if you looked at the time, you'd be able to have a very accurate picture of, if I went to the doctor and they said, can you give me an idea of your bathroom habits, I would just pull up my Angry Birds, and you would be able to have a clear picture of when I go to the bathroom.
Is it like on people's iPhone, you can track your screen time?
I wonder.
You can limit your screen
there
time?
There has to be a way to do that. Like, to just, if you just pull up my Angry
there's
Birds.
There's probably an app. I bet you there's an
it's
app
gotta be in
for
the settings.
Like tracking your on the throne time.
Well, you, well, I'm sure there is, but
if there's not, maybe we should invent one.
I agree, but I'm sure on Angry Birds I could just go into the
right.
settings and see
right.
when I've played
right.
and that would be you print right. that out and now you get accurate picture. So at any rate, but that's not necessarily the best thing. And even nowadays, I think I've heard, and this is, I have to preface this, what I had heard, but I believe I've heard that screen time, people on the phone, has mm-hmm. actually increased the incidence of hemorrhoids lately. And hmm. again, I heard that somewhere, maybe I made that up, so don't quote me on that, but I think it sounds like it could be true. Obesity is another contributing factor. Pregnancy, which I mentioned earlier with the story about my cousin. Anal intercourse can be a contributing factor. Low fiber diets, and which was the point that they were trying to make on that show I was watching with the scaled up anus. So if you don't have enough fiber in your diet, mm-hmm. it doesn't allow things to exit the way that they should, and makes your feces really hard and hard to pass. And then regular heavy lifting. And this is something, I'm a person who lifts weights, been lifting since I was in high school. And I do know guys that have had hemorrhoids from doing squats and everything. And mm-hmm. they kind of were like, I'm not squatting today. And you finally get it out of them, and they're like, I got hemorrhoids, yeah. bro. It's not cool, dude. You know,
ain't happening today.
Yeah. But it's something, again, the main thing takeaway here is repeated straining and putting pressure on that area.
Well, that's interesting, because in most of the peer-reviewed medical journal articles that I read, it gave any number of reasons that hemorrhoids develop, and it's really all just speculative, actually. Mm. So it is widely believed, it's sort of like common knowledge, that certain things make you more susceptible to increasing your risk of having hemorrhoids. But I want to say this. For all that they know about hemorrhoids, and for the fact that they have been around in existence since biblical times, you know, they've been around forever. They have been around since, I think, mankind.
Since buttholes.
Yeah. So since buttholes have existed,
no,
so as
buttholes.
So have, yeah, since buttholes have existed, so have hemorrhoids. So, but for all that they know or whatever, they still don't really for sure understand the pathophysiology, the etiology. They still don't really understand exactly what they are necessarily. They still don't necessarily understand fully what contributes to them and what doesn't. Part of that is because they're probably very underreported, because people really only go seek treatment when they're having an attack that they've probably tried to treat at home and have been unsuccessful.
Like the lady in the urgent care, where it gets
right.
to the point where you're like,
right,
you can't,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, preparation H is just not going to cut it.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, because there's a lot of fallacy regarding causation. And like you were just saying, that anal sex is a causative factor. And I read studies that said not necessarily.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so some studies... You know, there's a lot of gray area where this is concerned.
I think a lot of the causative explanations are really based on kind of mechanical observations and common sense that people would think
right.
would be common sense.
You right,
know, if you put more friction in an area
right.
and you cause irritation, then this
right.
is what's going to happen.
Or if you strain more,
yeah.
it's going to increase pressure and
stress and pressure and friction are going to cause problems. So.
Yeah, and so it's also interesting, because I also read that everybody has hemorrhoids. So that's a normal thing. If you were to do, you know, a digital exam on anybody, everybody has hemorrhoids, but they only become termed as quote unquote hemorrhoids when they are pathologic or symptomatic. So it's my understanding that they're normal for cushioning and for effective defecation, I think is what I read. Anyway, it's
so they're butthole cushion.
Yeah, and I was like, I was talking about this to someone yesterday, and I was like, why would your poop need a cushion?
So wait, we have butthole pillows? That's awesome.
Yeah. Your poop, just while it's hanging out in your rectum, just gets to be cushioned by these hemorrhoids. Except, you know, they're not really termed hemorrhoids until they start bleeding and getting swollen and whatever.
Which leads me to some of the complications that can come along with this. This can be a serious condition, and one that, you know, when we talk about when you go into treatments, you'll see some of the things that they do to treat this thing. But some of the complications that can go along with this are anemia, which is chronic blood loss, which can result from chronic blood loss from hemorrhoids. These things can bleed and bleed profusely, mm-hmm. and to the point where you will lose enough blood to where it can be an issue. And anemia is basically lack of healthy red blood cells to tissues resulting from blood loss. And then strangulated hemorrhoid, which is blood supply to hemorrhoid could be cut off, quote unquote strangulating it, which can cause basically tissue death, and you wind up with a whole set of complications there. And then the blood clot, which we mentioned earlier with the thrombosis, which where a blood clot forms in the hemorrhoid, and that may need to be lanced or drained.
So let's talk about why people seek treatment for them. The symptoms of hemorrhoids include bleeding, of course, pain, of course, pruritus, which is just a fancy term for itchy skin. This would certainly get me to the doctor. Fecal seepage.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'd probably be going to the doctor going, what's up down there?
That reminds me. You remember that, what was it called? It was called Olestra. It was like a oh, man, I have to think of what it was. It was like an additive, like a, they used to put it in foods. And it basically, one of the side effects of it was anal leakage. And so they had to stop using it. So go ahead.
Oh, my God. Was it like a nutrition supplement or something?
It was something that they put in foods to replace butter, I believe, is what it was.
Which led to fecal seepage. Oh, my God. Okay.
It's a fat substitute.
Oh.
I just Googled it. It's a fat substitute. And I remember one of the...
I do not remember that.
You don't remember? It was a certain kind of chips that they had, and people were reporting anal leakage.
No, I don't remember that. Like, oh my God. Okay. Other symptoms that would send people running to the doctor is prolapse of a hemorrhoid. So if you have an internal hemorrhoid, like I described before, and it prolapses so that it's, you know, now external.
Peeking.
Yeah, it's just having like a little turtle head Hello. Sticking out. And then mucus discharges. So, but these, of course, have negative physical effects, like we talked about, especially with the bleeding and the pain and the itching. And all, basically everything I just listed.
That was the commercial for Preparation H, the squirming from the burning, That was the whole thing. And I remember the one where they had a match and they take the thing and they go, and they go Preparation H.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating.
You know that Preparation H is actually used to stop bleeding. Like you can use Preparation H. I had learned that.
I didn't know that. I really don't know anything about Preparation H yet. Yeah. Thanks God.
Again, we're not giving any medical advice, but I had been taught in my previous medical experience that Preparation H can be used in extreme situations.
Interesting.
That's what it does.
But then, so hemorrhoids also can maybe lead you to seek out some professional advice and care because of the sociocultural effects. And okay, again, this is what I spend my weekdays doing. Between Sundays, I look up medical journal articles on whatever topic we're researching for the next week. And I stumbled across an article, and I'm not even kidding you when I say the title of this article is Sociocultural Context and Determinants of Treatments for Hemorrhoids Among the Nigeria Police Force.
I wonder if like the NSA now, is watching your web browsing
history. I don't know. I mean, why the police force?
There's probably some sort of explanation as to why there's a prevalence there.
Yeah, I'm sure. But anyway, okay, so I read this article.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I read it. Basically, they were studying the negative perception about the effects of hemorrhoids on sexual relations and also on work. So apparently, if you have hemorrhoids and thank you, Lord, I have not been affected or afflicted with hemorrhoids, but apparently hemorrhoids can diminish your sexual response. Maybe not your sexual response, but maybe your sexual drive or sexual appetite, because I think maybe because you're embarrassed or maybe because they're painful. I really don't know exactly because I haven't had hemorrhoids.
Based on the lady that came into that urgent care, I think sex was the last thing she was had on her mind.
Yeah. So anyway, and then also, you know, they were studying about how people, the Nigerian police force, if they had hemorrhoids, how it affected their work performance. So, I don't know. Anyway.
I can see that if you can't sit down and you're...
Maybe you also can't run. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got to ride around in a car, I'm going to actually get to that when I talk about the who's who of the hemorrhoid community, which is going to be a fact. Stay tuned, because that's going to be...
Well, my favorite part of this whole thing is going to be how did these things get treated, and we're going to talk about that soon. But first, Brian, why don't you take us around the world on a little... Yeah, take us on a trip around the world.
On a hemorrhoid balloon.
About hemorrhoids in other cultures.
Yeah, so just like you said when we started, hemorrhoids are one of the most commonly described medical conditions. They're actually mentioned in the Old Testament and Buddhist texts. Don't ask me to quote exactly the scripture. I just read that in a line, so we're going to go with it. So, in Egypt, actually, the Edmund Smith Papyrus, which is the oldest record of Egyptian medicine, actually specifically goes into detail about how to treat hemorrhoids, and they talk about the use of astringent lotions to be able to try to shrink them. Mesopotamia actually has the earliest known descriptions of hemorrhoids and other diseases of the anal canal, and the term umsatu, which is a term for lesion, was used to describe hemorrhoids there. So they had a lot of things to be able to treat them. They used a lot of herbs. For a long time, people figured out, and as we go along, you'll see that somewhere along the way, like, well, let's put something really hot on it and see what happens. So I did mention that I did not know the specific text in the Old Testament, but I do know, and I didn't want to get into this because I'm admittedly somewhat of a godless heathen. I don't know my Bible. I did go to vacation Bible school one time. But
you went to VBS?
Yes, I did. But I don't remember any of it. But I do know from what I researched that chapter 5 of, and I want to preface that, if you are a biblical scholar or religious, I'm not trying to offend anyone,
Brian,
but I don't know my Bible.
I don't think they taught hemorrhoids at VBS because I both attended VBS and I taught VBS when my son was little. And I'm telling you, the topic of hemorrhoids was never broached.
Okay. Well, chapter 5 of 1 Samuel describes a plague of emerods, E-M-E-R-O-D-S, which are hemorrhoids, that smote the people of Ashdod in their secret parts, causing many to die. So I guess of all the things that God does to people, turning people into salt, sending the locusts, this is all the stuff I remember from Vacation Bible School. Yeah. I guess maybe that's why they didn't. Yeah. But I think they could have made us behave a little bit more if they said, you're going to get, he'll give you hemorrhoids too.
Yeah.
But no, that didn't happen. So we move into India, and from the 6th century onward, hemorrhoid removal was done and documented in India. And we had mentioned some of the, in previous episodes, of Indian physicians and how they were pioneers of things like plastic surgery. One of the guys we talked about was a dude named Sushruta. I'm getting better with my Indian pronunciation. So he actually was a pioneer of Indian rhinoplasty, which is nose jobs, which is a simple way to say it. But he also described the different types of ARSA, A-R-S-A, which were hemorrhoids in the Indian language, I guess, of that time. I'm not familiar with the different dialects of Indian language, but I feel like I have to make all these disclaimers so I don't make anybody mad. And he talked about their management. So Agni, which is cauterization, and this is where you start to see people figuring out that if you poke it with something super hot, that maybe it'll go away. And so
maybe you'll get it to reduce itself. It'll just retract and go, hey, no!
And I'm sure they probably figured that out with probably wounds and battle wounds and things like that. If you cauterize skin, cauterize just basically means burn.
Yeah.
And so, and we still cauterize. Cauterization is a technique that is still used today. They actually have surgical knives that cut and cauterize at the same time. So that's not something that hasn't been done before. But I'm going to slaughter this one. Shastrakarma was surgical excision. And so the two, early on, they figured out that you're either going to burn these things to get them to burn and die, I guess, and just kill the tissue, or you just cut them out. But then you wonder, like, how do they control bleeding and all that? Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. But there
were... Oh, we're going to get to that.
There's a medical text in India that are called the Ayurveda, and they're very, and I hope I get that right too, but they're very, they're ancient texts that talk about various medical procedures. And there's a writer there named Vagbhata, that talked about advocating placing suppositories in the anus to cure the arsa, the hemorrhoids. And the suppositories were made for Jimukata fruit, seeds and fibers. And these were actually, and I don't even know what this is, if anybody, apparently it was successful. So he would make suppositories out of that. And then another guy advocated for fumigating the arsa with the same fruit to cause it to constrict. Now, I don't know what fumigating really entailed. I'm assuming they just blew it in there somehow. So in China, this was actually really interesting because there is a long history in China of treating piles, hemorrhoids, that goes back over 2,000 years. And based on the principle, and I quote here, sore herbs can be stringent, while puckery can control prolapse. Now, I could not find what puckery
Well, it sounds meant. Self-explanatory, yeah, but yeah.
So there were compositions of something called gallnut and allium that were applied to treat piles in different stages. And the early Chinese writings categorized hemorrhoids in five stages. Stages three and four were considered to be able to be treated, three and four were considered to be able to be treated with non-surgical interventions. Mm-hmm. And at the stage five, they actually advocated surgical excision, or again, the same thing, lancing or mm-hmm. or some sort of cauterization. So one traditional Chinese medicine text talks about prescriptions that were used to clear the heat in the bowels, stop bleeding, cooling the blood, and reducing swelling and easing pain. And they actually, and the prescriptions, I believe, were called Lang Hui Di Huang, which sounds legit, by the way, are considered to be one of the 100 classical prescriptions of Chinese traditional medicine. And in 2018, just to give a backstory, I guess China somehow determined that they made a list of the 100 mm-hmm. classical, and that was considered mm-hmm. one of them for hemorrhoids. Hmm. And they actually did a 2020 study that examined the effectiveness of this treatment and proved that it actually works. Hmm. And then go over to Greece, and a lot of our current medical knowledge, actually, Western medicine, has its roots in ancient Greece. No surprise, hemorrhoids were a common problem in Greece as well. And here's where we start to see a lot of descriptions and real documented evidence of how they treated these things, how they described them, all of it. And so there was a treatise that was written, and a treatise is basically a collection of works or a work that mm-hmm. describes a procedure or a thing. And so a treatise was written by a 5th century medical author that describes treatments and recipes. And he describes hemorrhoids as, and I quote again, and I feel like we need music in the back that sounds classical. And here we go. When bile or phlegm becomes fixed in the vessels of the anus, as it heats the blood in them so that being heated, they attract blood from their nearest neighbors.
So they're just summoning all yes, the blood vessel, come, all come the hither. Blood cells. Come over here. We're having a party.
So they believed in humoral clogging. And we talked about a lot of the theory of the four humors and how the humors being blood, bile, and phlegm, I believe. I think I might be missing one there. There were four of them.
Yeah.
That those being out of balance in the human body were the cause of disease. And so a lot of this has its roots in Greece, and you see it throughout Western medicine. But they believe that humoral clogging, heat, and the attraction of like to like are staples of Hippocratic pathology. And when they mean like to like, meaning that, like they said, the blood attracts more blood from mm-hmm. its nearest neighbors. Another author claimed that men from cities exposed to hot winds have their heads filled with phlegm, and that causes hemorrhoids. So, yeah. So there's a famous, there are a few famous paintings, and one of them is a painting from the School of Salerno, which is which described medieval surgery for hemorrhoids. And the physician or barber surgeon, which we'll get to, is holding a knife in one hand. I'm describing the painting as I'm looking at it. The person receiving the treatment is he's standing completely bent over a desk or a table of some sort, and he looks like he's standing on a upside down salad bowl.
It looks like those balance balls.
Yeah, like a Bosu ball. Yeah. That's what he looks like he's standing on.
Actually, I was gonna say, first of all, let's just talk about the hilarity of all of the oil paintings and drawings and stuff that we've seen since we've started this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a fascinating, curious, you know,
study in art history.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I like to draw and I like art and whatever. I mean, I'm not an art historian by any means, but I like to draw. And it's never occurred to me to draw anything like this, first of all. But this particular picture, and it comes from, we can tell you the name of the article so that if you if you want to,
you can Google the painting from the School of Salerno, and that's, you'll find it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. If you really just Google or medieval surgery for hemorrhoids, before I realized it was a person, it looks like a horse.
It does. It looks like a sphinx or something.
I mean, the thighs look like a horse's legs, and also that thing that he's got in his right hand, it looks like a horse's tail.
Well, no, that's the surgical knife you can see, which looks like some sort of dagger.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out what he's holding in his left hand.
Well, it's like a speculum. It's like something to open up the anal sphincter so
like
that
retractors
he can see.
Almost.
Yes,
yeah.
It's like a retractor. Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Because it says in his left hands, he holds an instrument to visualize and secure the hemorrhoids.
Ah, so there are retractors.
And in the right hand, he holds a knife to cut them away. But it also looks like he's poised to blow in there or something. Like, it looks like he's putting that thing up to his mouth.
It does, looks like he's going to...
It's a bizarre... And plus, like...
the expression on the guy's face that's getting the treatment.
Right. And
Please, sir.
Are you about done back there?
He looks quite irritated.
And also, the guy that's doing it looks like, oh, doesn't he have the look on his face like, oh? And also, the person that's doing it, he's like in a half squat position. So he doesn't look like he's in a very comfortable position.
It looks like the yoga. I don't do yoga, but I think it looks like the downward dog, but like up a little bit higher.
Yeah, it's just a very...
it's an odd picture, but that's the way it was done. And so...
apparently.
So I'll let you talk more about some of the techniques, but we did talk about how barber surgeons, when surgery and physicians were kind of having their thing over who could do what, barber surgeons performed these procedures, and surgical textbooks were starting to be written about how to do these, how to treat some of these. Clisters, which were enemas that were being done, were considered very popular at the time and were considered preventative. To be able to prevent these. So talk to me about how they treated this.
Okay, here comes the fun part.
What was available for me?
Here comes the fun part. Everybody get ready. This is going to be the good part. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about amongst many is cauterization, which you've already kind of touched on. You tried to touch on it, and I had to back you off. So like others... before and maybe even after him, Hippocrates wrote an entire treatise on hemorrhoids.
Did I say it wrong? I said treatise. Is it treatise?
I think it's treatise, but
ooh,
I don't know.
Wow. You just let me slaughter that one and didn't say a word.
Well, I think of treatise as like, you know.
Or treatise. Is it treatise?
I think of treatise as like agreements between
I thought it was treatise.
Governments
treatise.
Not to
maybe it's treatise.
Kill each other.
All right. Sorry. All right. Go ahead.
Treatise or treatise, whatever. I don't know. Mm. Okay. Hippocrates wrote a paper. Okay. About hemorrhoids. And so did you read any of this stuff, by the way, the actual writing of Hippocrates or any of the other people that wrote?
I read some of it. There was
because the language is so like old and flowery. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. I had to Google I was dictionary diving big time. Anywho. Okay. So basically, what I did is I just summarized this into my own words, okay? So, Hippocrates suggested the following procedure for treatment of a hemorrhoid with a cautery. First of all, The day before the procedure, you should purge the man with medicine so that, you know, you cleanse his bowel. So you do a bowel cleansing.
Prep kit.
Bowel prep kit, right. Okay, much like, you know, current day, we do that for a colonoscopy or maybe like a Barry Minima or any other type procedure that
Did
your
you
doctor...
Did you do the prep?
No. Then, on the day of the procedure, you bring the man in and you lay him on his back. You place a pillow below the buttocks. Force out... This is one of the parts where I was like, what? Force the anus as much as possible with the fingers.
Force the anus as much as possible with the fingers.
Mm-hmm. That's a quote.
Okay.
That's a quote. All That's right. not my own yeah, words. That's a quote. Because sure? some of this, I'm like, some of this, no, I have to put verbatim because it doesn't. Okay. Then it says, make the irons red hot. So now you've placed a pillow for comfort behind the patient's buttocks. You have reached in with your fingers,
no, you
I
forced,
presume.
Forced in.
And then your assistant,
your
on
PA,
standby, right, is next to you. And they're getting, the irons are in the fire. They're getting them nice and red. And then burn the pile, which is the hemorrhoid, burn the pile until it, and this is a quote, burn the pile until it be dried up so that none of the hemorrhoids are left unburnt. Burn them all. And I'm thinking, yeah, probably because you better burn them all on this first go round, because I don't think anybody would consent to having this procedure done a second time or in, like, you know, at a different point in the future. Okay. Then it says, that's not all. Then it says, when the cautery is applied, meaning the red hot iron, when the cautery is applied, the patient's head and hands should be held so that he may not stir. So you've got your fingers, you know, in the butt so that you're exposing the hemorrhoids, which are probably already not feeling too good down there. And then you've got your person on standby making the irons hot, and you've got all your other like heavy lifters, you know, holding the guy down. Then it says, but he himself, the patient, should cry out, for this will make the rectum project more. So let him more. Scream and holler, because that's going to increase his intra-abdominal pressure. It's going to make those hemorrhoids protrude even further outside of himself. Okay. Then, after the burning has been performed, boil lentils and tares, whatever that is. I don't know what tares are. Finely ground up in water and apply as a plaster for 5 or 6 days. On the 7th day, Brian.
They rested?
Oh, no. No, they did not rest. This is not even, no, there was no rest on the 7th day. On the 7th day, cut a sponge into a very slender slice. Its width should be about 6 inches square. Then a smooth piece of cloth of equal size, and smear it with honey and apply. Okay, then, that's not all. Then, with the index finger of the left hand, and the middle of the sponge is to be pushed up as far as possible. Mm-hmm. The middle, so you put your finger in the middle of that 6-inch square, and you take the sponge and you just shove it up there as far as you can go. After you've burnt it, okay? Afterward, wool is to be placed upon the sponge to hold it in the anus. So basically, you're packing it in there.
Yeah, blood packing, wound packing.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's not all. Still not all.
There's more.
Now, it says, and having girded the patient about the loins and fastened a shawl to the girdle, bring up this band from behind between the legs and attach it to the girdle at the navel. So what I'm envisioning is like a jock strap.
Yeah, like a loincloth type thing. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So like you fix that up, hold it
or
up.
Not like,
with,
yeah, like
yeah,
a,
with a yeah, thong yeah, or yeah. like a jock strap. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like a
okay.
big diaper.
All right. Then let the medicine render the skin thick and strong. These things should be kept on for not less than 20 days.
How do you go to the bathroom?
It says, when the patient goes to stool, the part should be washed with hot water.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Every third day, he should take a bath.
Every third day.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that was Hippocrates' recommendation for
how to treat a hemorrhoid. When they got the daily schedule, they were like, oh, God.
This is why those Nigerians don't want to report that they have hemorrhoids or anybody else for that matter.
I'm not getting that done.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay. That's not the only way to treat a hemorrhoid.
Oh, there's more.
No, there's way more. Okay. It's hard for me to decide which one to do next. That was pretty graphic, I think. A pretty graphic description on how to treat a hemorrhoid. So I'm going to move on to something that's, maybe not...
A little scaled back, yeah.
So sometimes people use radium capsules.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I guess you just used it like a suppository. I don't know too much about that, except that is reported as one of the historical treatments.
Wasn't it the watch dial people that used radium? And they got really sick.
Yeah. They were licking their paintbrushes and then they lost their teeth and jaws. Yeah, very sad. Okay. How about this? Bloodletting. So up until the mid-19th century, bloodletting was used for hemorrhoid treatment. Leeches, it said up to 20 per week around the anus. Mm-hmm. Cupping of the loins.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
How would you like to have a cup applied there?
Let's just pause for 1 second.
Okay. Take that in, everybody.
We've had to explain treatment options for the patients before. Can you imagine going, and then we'll take these little blood sucking things and we'll stick them there and we'll see how that works too. That's another option.
Yeah. No, I know. I have had patients for various types of procedures that they had done no research. They didn't have anything explained to them. And then when they walked in and they thought, oh, I thought I was just going to do such and this. I'm like, oh boy, have you got a surprise for you?
Can you imagine doing a consent for for leeches in the anus?
Okay. So, okay. How about this one? Electric current. Uh-huh. Direct electric current was first used in 1867. So essentially, they put something up your bum to the point of where the hemorrhoid is. And then they put this tip that has a current running through it onto the hemorrhoid. And then they like a bug zapper. Then they deliver a DC current to the hemorrhoid. It says that it's usually successful for grades 1 and 2 type hemorrhoids. So the kind that are internal but aren't prolapsed, and then also grade 2 is the kind that is internal and it's prolapsed, but it retracts spontaneously when you stop straining.
Peaking.
Yeah. So it's good for those kinds. The good thing about the electric current is that, because that's still used apparently today.
It's still cauterization when you think about it, right? I mean, it's just...
No, it's different because this isn't painful.
This is not painful.
There's no anesthesia that's necessary. There's no bowel prep. There's no pre-medication and there's no hospitalization. And the patients can resume normal activities right away.
So
it's like, I thought it was going to be like radio frequency ablation, but even that's a little different.
So what's the patient positioning for this?
SIMS position. So you have the patient laying on their left, or like you have the patient laying on their side and kind of rolled forward, with their hips rolled slightly forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With one, the leg that's side up is kind of bent.
Right.
Okay. So there's that. Something that we missed in our patent medicine episode, Rogers cocaine pile remedy. This was a suppository, and this claimed to shrink large painful hemorrhoids. And as an aside, cocaine can shrink inflamed tissue, so this may actually have worked. Brian, the next thing that we're going to talk about, and this is probably the part of the episode where, when I said this this episode is not appropriate for children, this is where that's gonna.
Now we're getting into it.
Yes, it's making its debut. This is the part. Again, during the patent medicine era in the early 20th century, late 19th century, early 20th century, this was a patent medicine device. This is called. Dr. Young's ideal rectal dilators.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what I recommend is for people not driving to pull up a picture. You can, it's on Wikipedia, Dr. Young's ideal rectal dilators, because really words can't describe this. Really what these are like butt plugs.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they are. The best description is they make these now, and you can buy them at any adult shop.
But they're not really used for, well, okay. This is what the advertisement said. It says, in piles and constipation, the best, and it has pictures of them, okay? And by the way, these things range from a half inch diameter to, wait for it, there are four sizes ranging from one half inch diameter to 4 inch diameter. It says the best results may be obtained by the use of Young's self-retaining rectal dilators.
Yeah, that's called a butt plug.
Self-retaining, sorry. If you start at the smallest and go to the largest. Right. I don't know that the smallest one would be too self-retaining if you got all the way up to the largest. Anyway, okay. So it says, rectal dilators, and I quote from their advertisement, they are made of hard rubber and come in sets of four sizes. May be used by any intelligent person. Okay. Their use accomplishes for the invalid just what nature does daily for the healthy individual. If you will prescribe a set of these dilators in some of your obstinate cases of chronic constipation, you will find them necessary in every case of this kind. Price to the profession, $2.50 per set. And then, okay, then I saw like an actual photograph of these, because apparently you can find these on eBay for sale. They look like, Brian, did you ever, when you were little, or maybe when your daughter was little, because I don't remember playing with these whenever. This sounds like a weird segue.
I just want to stop you right there and tell you that I didn't at any point in my childhood did I play with any rectal dilators. So let's continue.
So I didn't either. But when my son was little, he had this big rubber torpedo thing that you used to play with in the swimming pool. So you would like throw it and then you would dive for it or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So that's what these things look like. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are something. They look pretty darn big.
Yeah, it's aggressive. It's aggressive.
These look very aggressive. So listen to this. It says, according to the American Journal of Gastroenterology, these rectal dilators are no different than rectal dilators used today. They were made of rubber, sold in sets of four, like I described.
Wait. So because they're sold in sets of four, is there like a progressive workout that you're supposed to do to work up to the other ones? And what's the theory here?
Okay. The theory is in keeping with all the other stuff from the patent medicine era, which is to say that they made all of these crazy claims. So Dr. Young, the maker of these, reportedly raved about rectal dilatation, claiming it was a cure for insanity.
Ah, okay. Got it.
And maybe in some cases it was.
Yeah.
So it claimed to do the following. Okay. Now I'm going to list the following claims that it made, but this is not all of the claims. This is just some of the, mm-hmm. the better ones that I thought I should list like individually. Okay. Constipation, diarrhea. Again, constipation and diarrhea.
Right.
Okay. Promotes a more refreshing sleep.
Oh. Having trouble staying asleep.
Okay. How about this one? Relieves foul breath.
Ah, okay. I was wondering, because I've been chewing gum, and I guess now I get it.
The makers of gum are going, we have competition. The makers of Scope and,
butt plug flavor. Yeah.
Butt plugs or mouthwash. How about this? Acne.
Ah, okay. I could see that.
How about this? Anemia.
Okay.
Insomnia.
Yeah,
we well, it did one. Say yeah, promoted a more refreshing sleep. Okay, yeah. So that's one and the same. Anorexia.
Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing how...
A happy person is a hungry person.
I'm not seeing how it's going to promote... Because I'm not going back to sleep. If my rectum is dilated.
Well, headaches.
Ah, okay. You know what? That one I can see. Because if you stuck a 4-inch diameter...
You forget all about the headache that you have. Gone. Exactly. Okay. Hemorrhoids. Here we are. Hemorrhoids.
Okay, now we're...
Now, how in the world would this help a hemorrhoid?
Seems like it would cause the hemorrhoids.
I mean, I don't know how in the world this could
help a hemorrhoid. If we're talking about irritation, pain, pressure, friction, all those
other things.
But that's
what they say. Oh, yeah. Here's one that I believe. Flatulence.
I can see.
It could cause the temporary cessation of flatulence.
Or maybe that you won't be making
while it's
a sound.
While it's inserted.
Yeah, but or maybe the loosening of the area would make the sound of the flatulence.
If you dilate it.
Yeah, you won't, you know.
Then you just hear. Okay, how about this? Irritability.
Now I'm going to be irritable.
Okay. How about this? Cold extremities.
I could see it.
Okay, I think you're lying. The instructions warned.
Oh, there's a warning.
Okay. These were admonishments by Dr. Young. And I quote, do not neglect to use your dilators. Don't put them in a... This is not him quoting anymore. It says, do not neglect to use your dilators. Mm-hmm. So don't put them in a drawer and forget about them. Right. You need to be using these bad boys, okay? Use them occasionally as a precautionary measure.
Okay. So wait a minute. One question.
Do not, and lastly, do not fear that you will use them too much.
Ah, okay. All right.
There we go. Yeah. Is that what you were going to ask?
Yeah.
What if you get addicted?
How do I know that there's not maybe a bit habit forming? Did he have like a lubricant kit that he sold with it, or how did they? Did he advocate the use of lubricants?
That's a good question.
I'm assuming they did.
I did not.
Maybe they used like lard or something like that to get things going. I'm assuming, you know.
I did not get any of that. I didn't read that. Now, that's not to say he didn't.
Yeah.
It could be that I just didn't read down that far.
It seemed to me
that I was so intrigued by these things. I was texting these pictures of these things to my friends.
You actually texted to me.
Yeah, I did. I texted you. And I was like, ooh, Sunday is going to be a fun one.
But I'm assuming, though, in terms of customer feedback, you'd probably have some customers going, it kind of hurts. And so he might have said, oh, we'll try this. And I'm assuming people have been figuring out how to stick things in things for a long time and how to make it a little bit more lubricated. So I think people, and I remember when we talked about clisters, the enemas that they'd used to form in the Middle Ages, they used to use pig lard and things like that to make the insertion a little bit easier. So I'm assuming maybe they figured that out too.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So
how much did they cost?
$2.50.
For the kit?
Per set.
Oh, mm-hmm. Per set?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Did they make a good Christmas gift?
Didn't say that.
Wait a minute. Wait. How about a stocking stuffer?
Well, it is a stuffer. That was a good one.
Sorry.
That was a really good one. You did good. I'm so proud of you. You one-upped me. A few more things. Some of the other things that have been reported treatments of hemorrhoids over the years, some of which are even current recommendations to treat and relieve or reduce whatever hemorrhoids. Surgical excision, of course, which, by the way, surgery is supposed to be the last, like the final step, because it's a really hard surgery to have. Like it's apparently very painful. So surgery is sort of like the last resort, okay? Astringent suppositories, I think you touched on those earlier. Suturing of them, which I'm not exactly sure. I did see a little video And even though the patient was under general anesthesia, they were giving multiple injections of lidocaine, which is a local anesthetic with a very long needle. And then they put in the suture and they sort of went to town. And then I got interrupted. I couldn't finish watching the video, but it was kind of like, ooh. So I don't really know, but that's some kind of surgical procedure. By the way, I read that there are like 20 different kinds of surgical procedures now that are available. Not that every proctologist or colorectal surgeon, not that all of them perform all 20. Obviously, they probably all have their preferences. But anyway, suturing is apparently one. Not to be confused, I think, not to be confused with strangulation. So rubber band ligation is kind of a newer technique, which is, do you know about that?
No.
Okay, so these are for internal hemorrhoids. And again, there's no bowel preparation required for this, and there's no anesthesia necessary. So you could just like go to your doctor's office and have this done like on your lunch break. Okay, so basically what they do is you go in and they feel around for your internal hemorrhoid. I think this is only good for like grades 2 and 3, maybe. They put in this little short latex tubular type device that's hollow. They try to get the hemorrhoid within this tubular portion. And it's not very big around. It's maybe like, it looks like about a half inch or so. It's not too huge. And then you use a syringe, like an air-filled syringe at the end of it to sort of, or an empty syringe on the end of this to sort of use some kind of suction mechanism to pull the hemorrhoid, suck the hemorrhoid into this hollow vessel. And then you deploy a rubber band through this like triggering device, if you will, that's going to go around the base of the hemorrhoid. The rubber band ends up being at the base of the hemorrhoid, which strangulates it, and then eventually it just falls off. Okay, and so, you know, I don't know how much bleeding or whatever is associated with that afterwards, like when it falls off. I really don't know anything more than that, except there are videos that you can watch online if you care to watch someone actually put the rubber band ligation around an internal hemorrhoid, if you're curious like I am. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are at least a little bit curious.
Well, I think if you use your rectal dilators properly, then you should be fine, right?
Well, you probably would have. I'm imagining like, you know, like arterial plaque or something. It's like balloon dilatation. You smash that stuff up against the wall of the rectum or the anus. Anyway, okay. So dietary changes to include more digestible food and dietary fiber, laxative, herbal medications. Okay. You talked earlier about stooling habits. One study showed people on a seated toilet rather than in a squatting position spent more time on the toilet, perhaps reading, like you were suggesting earlier. This study led to recommendations to limit the time spent defecating to no more than 3 to 5 minutes once per day. So
that won't even people, get me on the next level of Angry Birds.
You will not be playing Angry Birds anymore.
No.
People. Let me just say, women already do this, okay? We wait until it's time to go.
That's what my wife says. She's like, I'm not sitting there.
Like, this is the difference between men and women, okay? And actually, I don't know that there's an increased frequency of hemorrhoids amongst women over men. I don't think that there is. Some studies say yes, some say no, and others are like, you know. Women are more likely to go and get treatment for hemorrhoids, okay, for one thing. So, but women are likely to go get treated for more things than men just in general. Okay. But basically, women, and I'm speaking on the behalf of women because I'm assuming that most women are like me. You wait until the need arises, you go to the bathroom, you do your thing, and then you just get out of there. You don't spend any, the only time we spend unnecessary time in the bathroom is when we're fixing our hair or doing our makeup. It's not to evacuate our bowels, okay? Not like men. So the recommendation, according to the study, is to limit your time on your toilet time to 3 to 5 minutes once per day. All right. Hot and cold sitz baths. Those are some things that say those can be soothing. Acupuncture apparently is something that you can get for treatment of hemorrhoids. Local anesthetics, Preparation H. By the way, Preparation H had $136 million in sales in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I have one more thing to talk about, which is squatting instead of sitting during defecation. And, you know, some places around the world, they squat instead of sit. Did you, when you were in Afghanistan, did they have squatting toilets?
I was just going to say, when I was there, when I first got there, I was on a fire base that was way out in the middle of nowhere. But when you get into country, you go through Bagram, which is a large base. And I remember going into one of the bathrooms, and there was a sign that had, and I'm trying to describe this, but it basically was a sign with like a don't sign, you know, with a circle with a thing. And it had a picture of a man standing on the toilet, squatting over the toilet. And it was basically saying, don't stand on the toilet seat and squat. And so I was like, why was that? And I was shocked, you know, just like,
you're
dumb
like,
American.
Huh?
And then they were like, well, no, because they don't know. And they were talking about how when we do all this stuff before you go in a country about how to cultural stuff, and they were like, they go to the bathroom that way. And then I remember, I can't remember who was telling us, they're like, it's actually, we're all, oh, ew, gross, because they're stupid Americans. And they're like, actually, it's a lot more sanitary, or it's a lot more physiologically sound way to do it. That, and like when they talk about how they blow their nose in some countries. I know the guys that went to Iraq, blowing your nose they would do it out of one side. But then people are like, oh, that's disgusting. And they're like, actually, think about it from their perspective.
Because then you're not touching
the contents. Or something, and you blow your nose,
and
then
you put it back in your
pocket.
I mean, you put it back in your pocket,
it's disgusting. So culturally, it's all relative.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because squatting during defecation apparently straightens the anorectal angle during defecation, which makes passage of your stool easier on you, okay? They say that anatomically it's supposed to help like empty out the rectum more readily. Okay, so people, we're going to pause recording for just a moment because I want to show Brian a video, and I encourage you guys to stop and watch this video before you hear the next part of this podcast. We're going to talk about the squatty potty. The squatty potty is not... they are not a sponsor of this podcast. Maybe many of you already know about this anyway. Okay, but the squatty potty. So my sister does not have a squatty potty. That's not where I'm going with this. But my sister used to work for an advertising firm. And so I was just blown away. When I went to this website, first of all, this was a great website because it's full of puns. And you know, I love me a pun.
Oh, yes, she loves puns.
Okay, so, but I was watching some of the videos for this, and I was like, oh my God, who is the, who came up with their advertising campaign? Because these videos are crazy, but it feels like an alternative reality world. But Brian says this is old news. So
this reminds me of when I just discovered TikTok, and my 15-year-old daughter is like, Daddy, you're too old for TikTok. But then I'll see something, I'm like, hey, did you see the one? And she's like,
I know.
Oh,
and you keep
God,
telling me about stuff
forever.
That you've seen on TikTok. I had not heard of TikTok until like a few weeks ago when my niece, who is 10, wanted to post a video of her dancing on TikTok. And my sister was like,
No.
And so my sister was telling me about TikTok. I had not heard of it. But so now I'm feeling a little bit like that right now because you're like, oh, yeah, the squatty potty is old news. But
I just want to say for our listeners, she was fired up to show me this.
I was so excited for this. I mean, I was like, I started to send you a video clip of this yesterday, and I was like, no, 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 I'm going to save it because I want to see his face when we watch this together and him just going, oh my God, what is this?
If you want to imagine someone's balloon getting completely, just completely burst, I that's exactly what I did to her. I feel sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. I just hope that there's, you know, one of our five listeners doesn't know about the Squatty Potty. And I hope that you will go to their website because, number one, like I said, I love puns. Okay. And this website, first of all, is full of puns. And so that's one little treat that you get. Like, for example, they say, oh, our mission, blah, blah, blah. We give a crap. We actually give a crap. But then also they have like famous people that use the Squatty Potty apparently. Uh-huh. Okay, let me tell you what a Squatty Potty is. A Squatty Potty is really like one of those little white plastic stools that you have in your kitchen or, mm-hmm. you know, I have them actually all around my house because I'm not very tall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I essentially have like, you know, it's like a modified Squatty Potty in my kitchen right now. Brian's looking at it, pointing at it. I don't have one in my bathroom yet. But anyway, this is like a little step stool. And basically it has like a half circle cut out of one side of it so that, you know, when you're not using it, you can push it up against your toilet, the base of your toilet, and then it would be out of the way. But you pull it out and you put your feet on it. Basically what it does is it elevates your legs so that your knees are up above
your hips,
exactly. So that you feel like you're in a squatting position, but you're sitting on the toilet. So it's like a hybrid of a Western toilet and like,
yeah. You know, and the whole theory is that, like, and they explain in the commercial, is that the way that we in the Western world sit down at a 90-degree angle on the toilet creates a, as he puts it, a kink in the hose. And it really is right. It creates like a restriction, yeah, for you to be able to have a smooth transition of fecal matter. And by straightening out the tube, basically. So, like, if you think about the way our bodies are made with our digestive system, it is just like plumbing. It's right. Just like a bunch of pipes that hook together to get things in and out. And so if there's a kink in the hose, it's not going to come out. And so it basically reduces the kink and lets things go out normally. So, makes sense.
What I like, though, is that they offer the regular stool, pun intended, and they also offer the Moonlight toilet stool, which has like a nightlight. So, you know, you can either just go with the simple one, or you can have the fancy one with a nightlight. But also what I wanted to point out is that it claims that it's likely to improve symptoms of constipation and hemorrhoids, which is very different than in the patent medicine days where they made all these outrageous claims like we talked about earlier in this episode that, you know, that you're going to see all these benefits of using this thing. So this thing actually just, it has, quote unquote, likely.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking if you worked your way up to the size 4 dilator and use this, you're in business.
I think if you work yourself up to the size 4 dilator
and use the Squatty Potty,
you might need a diaper. I think fecal seepage might be inevitable for your future.
Anal leak.
So, Brian, do you have anything else to talk about?
Actually, real quick, I wanted to talk about the who's who of hemorrhoids.
All right.
And there are a few people. This is not something that is people go out of their way to talk about. And there were some people... some famous people that are mentioned, but historically, there are a few people, Alfred the Great from 849 to 899, who is the King of Wessex in England, and you and I both love that Netflix show, The Last Kingdom.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Well, Alfred.
Oh, yes, I thought he had King IBS. Alfred.
Well, they say that he had hemorrhoids, and his having hemorrhoids was attributed to him asking God to issue a quote-unquote holy curse upon him to suppress his lusty ways by deterring his drive but not affecting his ability to rule. God answered. So, and that was his, and you mentioned sex drive being affected by hemorrhoids, and maybe that did the trick. So, But he was noted to have been afflicted with hemorrhoids. They don't talk. I didn't find anything about them treating him for it.
Yeah.
But he was
in the Netflix show, I just assumed that it was like IBS.
Oh, that's
irritable
right.
Bowel
they do
syndrome.
Talk about that. Yeah. So yeah.
I just assumed it was irritable bowel syndrome because of his diet.
Yeah.
You know, they
were
feeding him like bland soup and
that's
stuff.
Right.
Like, but I don't know.
Crohn's disease or something.
But also, Crohn's disease. Yeah. But it's interesting because maybe it could be alluding to hemorrhoids. But one interesting thing, did you read in your research about all of this that, you know, people, like I told you, like a lot of these things, they say, it correlates that if you're constipated, you're going to have an increased risk of hemorrhoids. Did you know that they've done studies where constipation is less likely to contribute to hemorrhoids than diarrhea? You're more likely to have hemorrhoids if you have chronic diarrhea.
Oh.
What?
Wow.
That's unexpected,
that.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I would have thought it would have been constipation.
Yeah. I think there's been more than one study that said
interesting.
That.
Interesting.
Anyway. Yeah. So it's interesting. Okay. Go ahead.
Napoleon, who was actually a very famous story about this. Now, we're going to get into some controversial territory. If there's a history professor listening to us, one of our listeners is a history professor, then he's going to be like, that is not true. There is controversy about this, but apparently Napoleon, who we all know was the emperor of France and a very famous war general, he lost famously at the Battle of Waterloo to the Duke of Wellington. And the story was that he suffered from very severe hemorrhoids, and he actually used to treat them regularly with leeches, which we talked about earlier, but no leeches were available before the battle. Okay. Now,
God. So they got all engorged.
Right. And so you mentioned I was in Afghanistan. I was in the military.
Yeah.
We did not have leeches for treating hemorrhoids, but, part of what you do in the military is recon, right? Recon, basically you see what's going on with troop movements and things like that. One of the things that he would do before the battle was mount his horse and survey the battlefield and determine when was the best time to attack. And remember, at this time, we're talking about Napoleonic, they call them the Napoleonic Wars. Troop movements were very specific. You advanced your columns of men. You know, it was a very specific way to do this. So you had to make sure that you surveyed the battlefield to understand how you were going to maneuver your artillery and all that.
Okay.
And so it was very important for him to survey the battlefield in the morning. And so, for whatever reason, it is noted that he did not do that morning. He delayed his attack, and that was, he delayed it, I can't remember the length of time, but he delayed his opening assault the morning of June 18th, 1815, and that was supposedly directly led to him losing the battle.
Fascinating.
And so, because they said no leeches were available, physicians resorted to laudanum, and it basically just... He was hungover, like he basically was out. And the way they said it was, it caused him to quote unquote slip into a stupor, and he just basically woke up late. He overslept, and so
this sounds like an episode for Ridiculous History.
Yeah, now it does, absolutely.
I wonder if they've done this actually.
But no,
Ridiculous History. If you could do an episode on this,
there's debate as to, and the whole idea was that the hemorrhoids were so painful that he couldn't mount his horse.
Yeah.
And that was why. But then there's debate over whether or not this actually happened.
Oh, okay.
And so some people say, there were some, right, because his brother apparently wrote, like, he had bad hemorrhoids, and he was, they think something was up. Like, he was sick with something, but he also suffered from chronic constipation, GI disturbances, all this other stuff. So they they say it could have happened, but more than likely historians say that this is kind of like this story got embellished over the years. And
it got ridiculous, but it is fun to imagine because, well, you never know.
Yeah,
actually,
you
never know. I mean, you know, all kinds of things happen.
People
are motivated or deterred by all kinds of things that you never know. And
there are a lot of things in military history where we see famous battles go one way or another way. And when they go back and research,
get to the root of the problem,
there are small things that went one way and the result was this way. Had they gone another way, it may have been different.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, very interesting.
Another guy named David Livingston, who was an African explorer and medical missionary in 1864. I mean, he didn't jump off the page as someone I've absolutely heard of, but he was very influential in the age of exploration in the 19th century, where all these Europeans were going around and, like, you know, exploring the heart of Africa and all these places. But he died later from complications because he refused surgery for fear it would cause him not to be able to keep exploring. And he died of blood loss and complications related to hemorrhoids. So crazy.
Hmm.
Karl Marx, who we all know is the Prussian German philosopher. He developed hemorrhoids while working on Das Kapital and, you know, Marxism. I'm not going to get political, but I guess maybe that's why his views, maybe some of his views on capitalism and politics were influenced by him being in pain with hemorrhoids. But he actually joked in a letter to a friend, and I quote, "I hope the bourgeois will remember my carbuncles." So maybe it did influence his writings. Ernest Hemingway, American author, suffered from many ailments, including depression, all these other mm-hmm. things, alcoholism and hemorrhoids. And Marilyn Monroe, which I thought was fascinating. She kept this a huge secret. Obviously, it's a little embarrassing. But then you think about, they're very famous pictures of her, and they're actually called flying skirt photos. Uh-huh. And the one where she stands over the vent, right, and it's like, but then that explains what she was doing. She was fumigating.
She was venting.
Yeah.
Venting the
Elizabeth Taylor, movie star, numerous medical difficulties, which I thought even without the hemorrhoids, emergency tracheotomy, skin cancer, dislodgement of a chicken bone from her throat, back traction, and two hemorrhoidectomy operations. So, yeah.
Oh, two.
Yeah, poor thing. And then honorable mentions, where I didn't get a whole lot of information on them. Honorable mentions for hemorrhoid history, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, Whitney Houston, and Lil Wayne.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I have just a little something to end on. I've talked about this book on several episodes so far. I have this book called Strange Medicine, and this is something that was in that book. If you feel forlorn over a lost love and you have hemorrhoids, fear not. Love sickness was considered a disease, a form of melancholy, and it is said that Galen wrote, "The opening of hemorrhoids is the surest remedy." So if you're, you know, getting over a breakup and you have hemorrhoids,
just stop thinking about her.
Just go and get it cauterized or something, and you'll forget right about it because you won't be thinking about anything else.
We're going to leave our listeners with that.
Yeah, we're going to end on that note. Thank you for listening. We hope you join us next time.